always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Wednesday afternoon-ish by Trevor Lane of Lakers Nation, of the Lakers Collective, of any number. What all am I missing?
Other stuff, too. There's the front office show, the basketball bulletin. There's probably some other stuff that I've forgotten at this point.
It's funny because, like, this is the time of year where all of us start looking at our dockets, right? Looking at our plate, and we like, all right, is there another like little sliver in there that we can add? Or is there a sliver that we could like free up and do something different with? So this is that time of year where that's a moving target. What we're doing in the years to come is kind of within discussion. But no, how are you holding up?
I'm doing well. I was digging the intro music coming in. It was a nice little vibe to that. I'm doing well. I'm excited for the offseason to really get going here. I think the Lakers are a fascinating team this summer to keep an eye on, but we're kind of in that hurry up and wait phase. I can't wait for like things to really start rolling. I'm enjoying the finals, but I think once we get through the finals, we're going to start to get some big stuff happening around the league. So it's like that. It's like that anticipation. It's a kid counting down till Christmas for me right now.
Yeah, it's even worse than that. It's the kid counting down to Christmas, but who's like neighbor next door is already playing with their toys, right? Because we're watching yeah. teams in the playoffs. We're watching teams in the finals, and we want the Lakers to be one of those teams in the finals. And it's like, how do we get there? How do the Lakers actually arrive at a point where like we are the team, they're one of the two teams that everybody's kind of waiting for? So that's kind of what we're going to be discussing over the course of the show. I just recorded an episode yesterday with Harrison. And then after we were done, really briefly, I was like, I don't know about this offseason. There just feels like a lot that the Lakers are looking to accomplish this year. And it made me wonder, what if this is a 53 win team that had some absolutely devastating injuries at the tail end of the season? What if the front office just decides, well, there isn't enough out there. The prices are too high. Is this such a bad thing if we run this thing back? And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about. I know Harrison is going to be pissed that I talked to you about it and not to him about it, because run it back is kind of his bit.
Right.
That's kind of going to be the focus of this here episode. So a quick reminder before we dive in, use that promo code HMA on Prize Picks and set a $5 lineup of your own, and they will give you $50 worth of free lineups on them. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, turn on notifications, subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts, all of that good stuff. We begin. So yeah, the Lakers are coming off of a season where they took a step forward last year, right? They won more games last year than the year before. Right before we had just brutal injury luck where Austin Reeves gets hurt and Luka gets hurt, both in the same game. Luka's injury takes him out just past when the Lakers season ends, basically, because of the type of injury that he sustained. We got to see LeBron kind of turn the clock back a little bit and carry a team to a playoff win there after playing a completely different role in the month prior, when he played kind of third option and did the little things. That month that we saw from the Lakers was a really exciting month. And I really liked the type of basketball that we saw from them. Still need a couple of tweaks here and there, obviously. I don't think they would completely run this roster back. But if the front office, if Rob Pelinka and his hopefully soon-to-be-hired second assistant general manager as well as the newly hired assistant general manager, if this new front office gets together and says, look, the Giannis trade isn't happening, I don't really want to buy into Miles Turner's longer than we would like it to be contract. There isn't a whole bunch of options out there that are just significantly better than running this thing back. What if we kick this can down the road, get to the deadline, and then maybe make whatever tweaks that we have to then? What would your response to that being the offseason be?
That would be a very on-brand.
Perfect face. The face that you made there was like, you know, that this tape.
It's not what, because here's the problem, Anthony. Here's the problem with that is that we've been talking about for how long at this point? Like,
yes,
they've got all these assets. They've kicked the can down the road. We talked about it last summer. Like, hey, great. They went and they got Marcus Smart, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia. They drafted a Dude Thero, and they did all of that without giving up any of their draft capital. That means they're going to be able to do something at the trade deadline. They're going to have options. They kept the powder dry, all of that. Then we get to the trade deadline, and it's, well, you know, the right move wasn't out there. Maybe Luke Kennard helps a little bit, but just, you know, you don't want to force something. You can't buy a house that's not for sale, all that kind of stuff. So this summer, okay, this summer then, all right, they're going to make the big move, $48 million in cap space this summer, all of that. You don't want to go to the summer and then come out of it and go, well, maybe the trade deadline next year. And here's the reason why. It's not that that would necessarily be the worst thing ever. This is a good team. This is a good team, and running it back would keep a good team, a good core here together. They'd be winning games. Are they that next tier team where they can go win a championship? Probably not, but they are a very good team. And it, frankly, when you look at the free agents that are out there, most of the best ones are Lakers already, right? So that's part of the challenge too. Like, who are you really pivoting to on the free agent market? But the problem with all of that is Luka. Luka can be a free agent in a couple of years. It's not that far off. And you've been talking about building a team around Luka and through the lens of everything fitting with Luka. You need to take steps in that direction. You've got to take steps towards building a team that fits around Luka. And I don't think that's what they've done to this point. I don't think this team is really structured around Luka the way they need to be. And so what you don't want is you kick the can to the trade deadline. Nothing materializes then. You kick the can to next summer. And then Luka's going, guys, you know, I could be a free agent in a year. I've just spent the last 2.5 years here. What are we doing?
Watching you kick cans. Here?
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want him looking around and thinking, huh, well, maybe this isn't the right spot to be. So that, I think, is a big motivating factor here, in addition to just the franchise's desire to win and all of that. That's the problem that I have with just kicking the can down the road. I do think we probably see more of a blend of the current team with, I would hope, at least a few significant moves. Like, I don't think everybody's just gone and you bring in almost an entirely new team. So, yeah. But I think they do have to make real strides towards landing the types of players that fit with Luka Doncic and finding long-term fits. So you want to bring in a guy and say, hey, Luka, this guy right here, this guy that we just got, he's going to be with you for the next 3 years plus. And they've not done that so far, and I think that's something that's got to be on the to-do list this summer, whether or not they bring back the bulk of this year's roster or not.
Yeah, you hit on the main reason that this outcome would, I think, set off fans everywhere. And it's that, you know, LeBron has held off father time in ways that we just haven't seen from players his age, right? He's coming off of another All-NBA. No, he was ineligible. But a year ago, he was an All-NBA player. This year, he wasn't eligible for it because of injury, but was still able to beat the Houston Rockets and, you know, be the best player on a team who got out of the first round. And, you know, he's done all of this. He's held up his end of the bargain. And what we keep getting told as transaction cycle after transaction cycle get sat out is, well, you know, this summer, the summer of 26, remember, it was the Giannis plan. It was Project 2026. It was like any number of names that we called it was always this being the focus. And if the reward for, or if the carrot or the you know, that is waiting for us, that is dangling there, is for sitting out so much of LeBron's, you know, last final chapters of his prime, is Rui Hachimura's back. Look how exciting that is. Yeah, it just would not sit well. And you know, it's funny. I always look at this stuff through the lens of Mark Walter taking over for the Dodgers when he bought the Dodgers, and the process that went into putting Andrew Friedman in power, and you know, building out that front office and hiring Dave Roberts and all of that stuff, right? He got to the Dodgers and basically said to Ned Coletti, here is the kingdom. Here's all of the assets. Here's all of the resources. You want to go trade for you know, Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett and Adrian Gonzalez, and you want to go and build out your, I think Nick Punto was also in that trade. You want to build out your the major league roster that way while we build out the minor league system behind it. All right, let's do that. And the result from that was a team that wasn't reaching the heights that Mark Walter was expecting. And Ned Coletti finds himself talking about the Dodgers for Sportsnet LA. And I think, you know, here with this front office, and this is some of the sense that I'll get, you know, from time to time talking, you know, to some of the people closer there to the Lakers there, is like, is this front office, is Rob Pelinka the long-term guy? And if it's a run it back type offseason, if it's another summer where he's telling Mark Walter, no, I promise, this upcoming trade deadline, this or the summer of 27, that's the year that will really, really put the team together. He's gonna go the way of Ned Coletti. And maybe that's worth it. Maybe that's what it takes to finally get the front office in that you know, Lakers fans have been kind of hoping for years. But I just don't see how Rob Pelinka would survive a summer that would be that kind of a letdown, even if it is a blend. That's the other part of this. And another way to kind of attack this is, what does a successful offseason look like to us, right? That way we can outline what the expectations would be realistically of this front office if they are trying to stick around here long-term. So to you, Trevor, what would be a successful Lakers offseason given the limitations that exist internally and across the league?
I'll tell you what it's not. It's not you exit the summer with a roster that on paper is better than OKC or San Antonio, because I see that a lot from Lakers fans. It's like, oh, they can go get this guy, but does that make them better than San Antonio? If that's the bar that you're setting, forget it. There is no success this offseason. It's not happening. So that can't be where you're setting the bar. You'd have to build the best team that you can and trust that, you know, this sport is not definite. We don't know what's going to happen. There's a reason why you play the games, and trust that if you put the pieces together, give yourself a shot, get Luke in the playoffs, off you go. You can maybe do something there and make some noise. But I think what is success is finding pieces that are going to fit with Luka Doncic, having a vision for what that's going to look like. I've got ideas for exactly what types of players those should be. And it's no surprise. You're looking for, you know, athletic players that can defend, that can run the floor. Ideally guys who could shoot. You need a lob threat. You need guys who can provide a little bit of that high motor energy as well. But targeting specific players, laser focused on them. What you can't do is get distracted by players that might be a decent value, but don't really fit the skill set that you need, because you spent so many years not being able to acquire those kinds of players. You've got to land the right pieces to fit around Luka. And I don't think that we're in a situation where bringing back the bulk of last year's team is necessarily a failure, because it's not like there's a bunch of other options out there in free agency. If you told me, like, hey, Mikal Bridges, Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Derek Jones Jr., they're all free agents, they all could be had, and the Lakers go, nah, let's just run it back with Rui and Luke Kennard or something, that's a different story. But that's not the world that we're living in right now. Yeah. So bringing back the bulk of this roster isn't necessarily the worst case scenario. I could even see a path where they actually stay above the cap in order to do so. That limits you in terms of having $15 million in spending power with that full mid-level, and then you're going to have to do the bulk of your work on the trade market. But ultimately, it's however you get there from here to when the dust settles, you've got to have legitimate pieces that you can say fit on a Luka team and can ideally take you a step forward in terms of your growth as a club. You're not going to be as good as San Antonio. You're not going to be as good as OKC, but can you be that team that can say, you know what? We at least have the pieces that can allow us to be competitive, that can allow us not to go out in a sweep against OKC. They can allow us to go, you know, if we're going to lose a series, most series we're going to lose 4-2 or something like that. And hey, you never know. We get a couple of bounces in a few games and we're advancing to the next round. That is, I think, the type of roster that you're realistically hoping to build this summer.
Yeah, the notion of just leapfrogging OKC and San Antonio is a crazy one, because both OKC and San Antonio took years to come together, right? Even the Knicks right now, that, you know, the building the Knicks was a process that I think more closely aligns with how the Lakers are going to be built, right? Where they didn't full on tank. They grew through trades and free agency, and they arrived here without fully bottoming out. That's kind of what the Lakers are looking to do. But even the Knicks took a while to arrive here, right? Like, even after they got Jalen Brunson, and even after they hired Tom Thibodeau is not even there anymore. That process has taken a while to finally arrive here. So I think, to me, what I would consider, and it probably is pretty close to what you're talking about there. To me, it's like, all right, give me tangible progress and give me the sense that there is a long-term goal here. It isn't just, well, we want to sign short-term contracts so that we can, you know, have cap space again next year. Oh, we want to, you know, sign these shorter-term deals, or we don't want to take on any money that extends beyond this season so that we have expiring trades or expiring contracts to trade at the deadline. Like, there has to be some kind of well-thought-out kind of even multi-step process that the Lakers need to head down. And you know, arriving here with the, you know, to use Rob's term, optionality, that was step one of that. You know, if you listen to Lakers people talk, this was step one, was arriving here at this offseason where Giannis is going to be available and where you'll get the fallout from whatever Giannis trade, if Giannis isn't a Laker. And you know, the maneuverability that the Lakers have built for themselves, that was supposed to be step one. So now we got to see, I think, step two. And like you're talking about, that step two has to have a very precise vision in mind where Luka's not going anywhere, right? He has said it. He said he loves LA. He wants to be a Laker a long time. All of that stuff. So ideally, Luka isn't going anywhere. Everybody else, to me, should be within, you know, the conversation or in the conversation for, do you fit with Luka long term? You know, and whatever, and at whatever number you're going to be on the team with him, and that's where a lot of the guys who are currently Lakers, like, yes, those guys returning are better maybe than some of the alternatives in terms of raw talent. But in terms of fit with Luka, that's like, that's where I don't know that Rui necessarily fits on a Luka Doncic team. JJ would tell you that Jared Vanderbilt probably doesn't fit on a Luka Doncic team. Does LeBron fit on a longer term Luka team? Does Austin Reeves fit on a longer term Luka team? Those are the conversations that I would like to have some clarity on after the summer, as difficult as that is to kind of ask for. You said you have some kind of player archetypes, at least in mind, for what, you know, for building around Luka. Does Austin fit those archetypes? Because that's the question I find myself asking the most frequently.
Offensively, he does. Defensively, I think that's where you run into your concerns, right? With Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic. I think people get too far into the whole, like, oh, it's a non-athletic backcourt. No, it's not. Because it's not a backcourt. Not when we're talking about defense. Right. Luka's not defending guards. Yeah. And people get too locked into, oh, you know, Steph Castle's going to torch Luka. Well, Luka's not going to be defending Steph Castle. So I do think that there is a baseline level of athleticism that you need. I think if you look at today's NBA finals and you look at how much ground defensively guys have to cover and the level of motor that guys have to have, that's what you've got to have alongside Luka Doncic. You have to have guys that are going to cover a lot of ground, that can run with a very high motor all game long, because that's not necessarily going to be Luka. He plays fine, right? There's no problem with what he's doing, but you need guys who are going to do everything that Luka doesn't do. Going to be diving on the floor, going to be chasing down rebounds, and Luka's a good rebounder, but super switchy defensively. They're going to contest all the shots. They're going to do all of these things to allow Luka to really thrive and focus his energy on what it is that he is absolutely elite at, and that is controlling the offense. So Luka needs certain pieces around him. Austin fits on the offensive end because I think we've seen Luka be successful having a secondary ball handler. In fact, I think it's a necessity that there's a secondary ball handler, that the defense can't just be entirely focused on Luka. As good as he is, he needs opportunities where somebody else can create, and he doesn't have to be the guy with the ball all the time. He already has a high usage rate. You need somebody else out there on the floor that can do some things. And again, historically, we talk about Jalen Brunson, we talk about Kyrie. No, chat, I am not comparing Austin Reeves to those guys. I'm talking about the role. Everybody gets all up in arms about that kind of stuff, right? Where it's, how dare you compare Austin Reeves? Austin isn't the same as Kyrie. Don't hear what I'm not saying. We're talking about the role of having another ball handler out there, whether that's Austin Reeves or anybody else. I do think that is an important player to have. Ideally, that player would also be good on the defensive side of the floor, and that is difficult to find. Austin, I think, is a bit too maligned for what he is defensively. The areas of weakness that he has on the defensive side of the floor are very loud areas of weakness, so he is a pretty easy target, I think, when it comes to that kind of stuff. At best, though, let's face it, he is a average at best defensive player. And so does he fit in that archetype of you need a bunch of super high motor guys that are going to be flying all over the place, can hit shots athletically or on another level? No, he doesn't fit there. As a ball handler, he does. I'll tell you what you have to have is, if you are going to build with Luka and Austin in a five-man group together, basically everybody else on the floor has to check those boxes I was talking about. So that's where suddenly you don't have the leeway to say, well, you know what? DeAndre Ayton's a good value. Let's add him. And he was fine. But does he ultimately fit? Does he complement the skill set? Does he take away from it, or does he mitigate any of the weaknesses of Austin and Luka? Not to the degree that you want. And that's where you could have that conversation about LeBron. You could have that conversation about Rui. It's part of the reason why Marcus Smart works so well, because he does check those boxes of mitigating the weaknesses of Austin and Luka while complementing the strengths. So I think that your margin for error, your ability to stray from the specific archetype of the other three positions, is drastically diminished by having Luka and Austin on the floor together. Like, you have to hit it out of the park in terms of athleticism, defensive capability with the other three spots. I think it can work. It's just a tough needle to thread, because you've got to get it right on the other three guys on the floor with them.
Yeah, that's why I think the structure of Austin's contract becomes so important, because like, this is, unfortunately, you know, this is a question that we were hoping to have answered this last offseason or this last postseason, right? Was the hope was that you would get a postseason where we find out whether Austin and Luka can defend at a level that they would need to while facing a team like OKC, while facing a team like San Antonio. I'm still not convinced Denver is going anywhere anytime soon either, because Jokic is still really bleeping good. And who knows who else is going to pop up in the West in the years to come. And yeah, I look at the combination of Luka and Austin, and offensively, I can see it. Like, I like the idea that you can have a dynamic offense that features two legit ball handlers on either side of the court, who ideally, and I think Austin is going to really, you know, work this summer at becoming a better shooter than he was this last year. But ideally, you know, you have those two guys on either side of the court. The defense has to rotate over to one or the other at basically all times. I can see the vision offensively there. Mm-hmm. Defensively, given what the Lakers are working with, I don't know that I you know, the Lakers can build out the defense that they need to with those guys there, given who's going to be available this year, right? Like, all right, you make a giant offer for Walker Kessler, that takes you out of Peyton Watson. You make a big offer for Peyton Watson, that takes you out of the running for Walker Kessler. You bring back even a LeBron who's going to expect to start. Well, now all of a sudden your small forward has to be an elite defender on the perimeter to help make up for now three guys who aren't going to defend on the perimeter in a disruptive fashion. So yeah, there's a lot going on here heading into the summer that I'm really nervous about. And, you know, I ended the show yesterday with Harrison, and then we really briefly just kind of talked, and I was like, man, I don't know that this offseason is going to like be what everybody is kind of hoping for. How optimistic are you about the chances that the Lakers have the kind of offseason we're talking about here?
Well, one thing I want to throw in is we're talking about, well, they need all these hyper athletic guys who can be super switchy defensively and shoot and all that. JJ Redick said in his postseason presser, he also wants guys who can dribble, pass, shoot, which is a checklist that I think a lot of teams, right? Like,
yeah,
that's difficult to find. And you look at what we've seen in the playoffs, how many teams are running three guards out there at once too. Like, that's how they're countering ultra defensive teams and having multiple guys that can create on the floor. You're not going to check every single box. That's the truth. You're not going to check every box this summer. How optimistic am I? I wish the Lakers cap space was not being obtained by seeing guys who they don't want to lose, or at least not lose for nothing, drop off the books, right? Guys like Rui, like if the Lakers were obtaining their cap space because Jared Vanderbilt and Dalton Connect and Maxey are dropping off the books and that's going to somehow yield $40 million, then let's go, right? You're just adding to the roster. I think they've got to be very careful to not subtract. It can't be a two steps forward, two steps back type of situation where you add Andrew Wiggins, but you lose Rui Hachimura, just for example, right? Your real home run is you've got to add to the pieces that you've already got. You've got to find depth. And that's a very, very difficult thing to do in today's NBA. I also think when you look at the market, you look at how many teams are going for it right now. There's very few teams that are going to be going into next season saying we're in a rebuild stage. So how many teams are actually going to be selling when we talk about the trade market? I think that can be a complicating factor as well. But ultimately, am I optimistic or not? My head says it's a very, very difficult thing to do what the Lakers need to do this summer. That said, we're not privy to all of the conversations that are taking place. There may very well be some kind of a plan in place already. They may know they're getting a player that maybe we're not considering. I think there will be pathways to improving the team. I'm optimistic that progress can be made. My concern is that the margin for error, despite the amount of cap space they have, is zero because of the players that they would be losing in a scenario where they are a cap space team. So I'm going to remain optimistic because that's just kind of me. I think there is a pathway to make it work. And as long as there's a pathway, I'm going to try to find a way for that to happen. But it is going to be a very difficult thing to significantly improve the team without also losing pieces that were at least in part responsible for their success last season.
That's kind of why I feel myself going back to the Giannis notion or the Giannis concept. Before we recorded today, Jake Fisher, who does the Substack with Mark Stein, reported that the Bucks are not going to trade or agree to any kind of a trade or haven't even asked for final offers from teams. They don't want to head that far down the process with anybody until after the finals, just in case the New York Knicks lose after leading 2-0 in this final series against San Antonio. And what that tells me, and you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but what that tells me is that they don't love the offers that they've gotten so far. And why would they? Like, Miami's offer is like Tyler Hero, who they're hoping Milwaukee really, really likes because he's from that area. They aren't offering Bam Adebayo. I guess you could try to talk yourself into Khalil Ware and some middling picks that are going to be affected by Giannis eventually going to Miami. So, like, that offer isn't great. even the Lakers offer when they talk to whenever those conversations take place between them and Milwaukee is like, well, we sure hope you really, really, really want to go right into a rebuild. And here's a bunch of financial flexibility and a few picks that, again, are going to be impacted by Giannis, who's going to be here. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, with New York, maybe Milwaukee is hoping that one or two of those wings get involved. I know that there were some talks with Minnesota where maybe they're hoping to land Jaden McDaniels. But right now, I don't think that the offers are so great that the Lakers aren't in the running. And so long as that remains the case, I feel like Giannis is the closest thing to enough of a step forward while losing some of the guys that we know that the Lakers are going to lose. So have you allowed yourself to go down that path with Giannis potentially becoming a Laker this summer?
Yeah, I've generally been out on the idea of going after Giannis just because I'm so concerned about the depth piece from there. Like, how do you add Giannis and still have any kind of flexibility to get the kind of depth that you need on this roster while recognizing that there's always going to be an appeal to putting two top five players on the floor together? I'm coming around to it a bit more just in terms of you're not going to have the same kind of depth as San Antonio. You're not going to have the same kind of depth as OKC. Zig where they zag. And just go get the top end talent. Say, hey, if we're healthy in the playoffs, our five man group is going to be better than your five man group. You may have your guys 6 through 10 might be better than ours, but we're going to play our dudes 40 minutes during the playoffs and good luck dealing with that. That type of mentality. And there's a lot that would obviously have to go into building out that kind of a roster. I don't think the Giannis stuff is very likely. I buy the reports that he wants to stay in the Eastern Conference. I would too if I were him, and I were looking at the state of the Western Conference and the state of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
He's saying, yeah, let me stay here. But I don't think it's likely the Lakers can have one of the better offers either. And I don't necessarily take it as Milwaukee doesn't like the Heat's offer. I mean, it was the Heat's offer that reportedly Milwaukee was like seriously considering right before the trade deadline and then ultimately decided to hold off. I just think if I'm Milwaukee, if I'm looking at the situation right now, are the Miami Heat really holding back resources right now to where you're trying to squeeze them a little bit more? Probably not. Probably not. What their offer is right now is probably what their offer is going to be a week from now, a week and a half from now, 2 weeks from now, as we're getting closer to the NBA draft. So why not just give it a little bit more time and see if somebody else swoops in and gives you way more than what the Heat are offering? If the Heat's offer is not being beaten right now, but you know it's not going to change, it's going to be the same offer a week from now, why not give that time and just see if something else comes in? And who knows, maybe New York completely blows it. They lose the next three straight games and then they are reinvigorated when it comes to a Giannis pursuit. And maybe that shakes up the whole situation, but that Heat offer is going to be there. That's the floor for them. That's always there. The longer you space this out, the more chance somebody else has to come in and give you something here for him. So I think Giannis winds up getting moved. I don't think the Lakers offer, even if, you know, people jump to, well, sign and trade Austin Reeves. Austin's got to want to go to Milwaukee. Does he want to go to Milwaukee if Giannis isn't there? Probably not. I wouldn't imagine so. I don't know, but I wouldn't imagine he would want to do that. But even if he did, Austin and three firsts, is that beating the other packages out there? I think it certainly gets you in the running. But if Austin Reeves says, I don't want to go to Milwaukee, or, you know, I'd rather go sign with Brooklyn or whatever, then three first round picks being kind of the best thing the Lakers can offer. I don't see them realistically getting into the mix with that. I think here's what I think it would take, Anthony, is it would take Anthony Davis all over again. It would take Giannis going to the Bucks and saying, I only want to be a Laker, and telling every other team, Boston, sorry, I don't want to go to your team. I will leave in a year in free agency. You will lose me for nothing. That's what it would take for the Lakers to get Giannis. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, if that was going to happen, it would be so that he could go to Miami and Miami would have to put less on the table and he could go to a better team there. I don't know. Outside of that, and look, I said this the other day on the show, and I truly feel this way. This is how I think the last few years have played out, where out of nowhere, some all-star, you know, somebody that like a legit all-star becomes available who we didn't think was going to be available. And the Lakers will trade for, like, how many of the trades, you and I have been doing this for a long time, right? Like, how many of the trades have the Lakers, or how many of moves have the Lakers made that were the ones that everybody talked about going into any transaction window? It basically never happens, right?
Oh, I instantly think of the Pau Gasol trade, the, oh my God, where did that come from, right? Or the Luka trade. Like, those are, yeah. And that's part of what makes the NBA offseason better than any other offseason. It's this kind of the RKO out of nowhere type of situation. But you're right. Like, yeah. that's it's impossible to foresee that kind of stuff. And that's what I want to leave out there, as there's always that potential that we get that notification and it's, wait, the Lakers did what? Like, yeah. That element of surprise could change this entire conversation. Like, Rob Pelinka could be listening to our conversation right now, laughing his ass off, saying, these guys have no idea what I got coming. I hope that's the case. Is it likely? I think it's a tough path this summer for them. But they've got a lot of flexibility, so I'm not going to count them out from doing something dramatic that maybe we don't see coming. I don't know, I think that's going to be Giannis, but you're right. Look, there's always the potential that somebody who we don't know is available secretly is, and next thing you know, this Lakers roster is going in a direction that we didn't see coming.
Yeah, and I honestly, I would put that as like the likeliest scenario here, where, you know, just based on recent transactions and the way that these windows have tend to gone, the names, like I brought up Miles Turner has been a Lakers trade target for like my daughter Avery's entire life, basically. And it's like at this point, I don't see it happening, even though I think there's some basketball reasons to, you know, for it. I could see Milwaukee being,
are we allowed to use that phrase yet? Or is that still too soon? Basketball reasons?
What's that?
Oh, I know. Can we use the phrase basketball reasons? It still feels too soon to me. Like, I hear that phrase and it's like, oh, bad memories.
Yeah, basketball explanations is what we'll go with here. But yeah, like I you know, he's makes some sense. The Lakers, I think the Lakers are going to have to be able to, you know, play five out confidently next year in trying to deal with OKC and in trying to deal with Wemby defensively. Like, that is going to be something that, but do I think Miles Turner is definitely going to be the center of the Lakers' future while Rob Pelinka and JJ Redick tell us about how they need to go in more of a youth and athleticism movement? Probably not. And so, like, you know, and yet, like, when you kind of outline, all right, the Lakers want to go in this youth and athleticism movement, there aren't very many centers that fit those guidelines that are going to be available this year that we can think of, right? Nick Claxton, anybody? Again, Walker Kessler for the 37th time. Like, I just don't necessarily see it. So, especially after the Lakers swindled Danny Ainge into helping them make the Luka Doncic trade, right? Like, I just don't.
Didn't he find out like 30 minutes before or something what the trade was that he was involved in? Something right, like that.
He's like, all right, so what am I helping you guys do here again? Wait, what?
I wish somebody had filmed that moment or recorded that moment somehow. His reaction would have been, it would have been right up there with the that Denver podcast that was reacting, yes, to the Luka trade that everybody goes, that is just good for the soul to go back and watch that one every now and then. But I wish, yeah, we had Danny Ainge in that moment where he found out what the trade actually was that he was involved in.
Right, right. Like, oh, we're just hoping you move money, right? Danny, well,
actually.
What would you, if, you know, to finish out this theme of potentially the Lakers potentially running it back to whatever extent, if this offseason doesn't necessarily live up to not just our expectations, because our expectations don't necessarily mean anything, but if this offseason doesn't necessarily live up to the expectations that, like, Rob Pelinka has probably set internally. We saw him get his contract extension. Even Elaine Shen, who just was promoted to CFO with the Lakers, she is somebody who is closely tied with Rob Pelinka. Like, What would you say would be, you know, the kind of fallout that you'd be kind of hoping for if the Lakers basically go into next season with last year's roster plus somebody at the mid-level or something?
Like, in terms of, would you be, you're asking what I would be hoping for in terms of like disappointment around the team in order to make a change with the GM?
No. If this offseason, you know, if we don't necessarily see like the longer term plan here by way of whatever moves that the Lakers make here, and if it does look like it's just kind of kicking the can and spinning wheels again just for the sake of buying houses that aren't for sale, and we get those excuses all over again, do you see a world where the Lakers and Mark Walter move on and say, Rob, Jeannie, everybody here, thank you for your time. Let's start to plan everybody's exits from here on out.
Sure. I think it would take two cycles. And by that, I mean the trade deadline and the summer for it to really become clear, like, okay. And if Luka was getting a bit agitated as well, I think that would also speed up that kind of a process. But yeah, I think that's what it would take. It would take pretty clear and obvious failure at this point this summer. You would have to go into the season because there's always that question. You know, we went into the season saying, what is San Antonio? Are they going to take that next step? I think they took an even bigger step than just about anybody was predicting to become a team that's now in the NBA finals. There is always that air of uncertainty. So it would take going through the summer, having there be disappointment, negativity around what the team ultimately did, getting into the season, having that negativity continue to play out on the floor, have things not work out, the trade deadline doesn't offer any kind of salvation, then you start maybe looking at making some kind of a change from there. I think the other thing you got to be real careful of too is when we talk about waiting for somebody's seat to get hot, though, as well, that I always think about, well, what about Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak back in the day where Jeannie took the keys to the car away because she was worried they're going to do something stupid trying to save their own jobs and they're going to mess things up even worse. So we need to move on. So, you know, how much does that type of dynamic factor in with what Mark Walter would ultimately do? But again, I do think that Rob Blake is going to be given the chance to build this team out around Luka the way that he envisions. And that's going to involve this summer, potentially the trade deadline as well. I've been saying they need to get the bulk of their work done this summer and not have a whole lot to do at the trade deadline, because you just can't keep kicking the can down the road. You've got to show significant progress. But I think that's going to happen. If we're going to see a significant shift, we're probably talking about next summer in terms of things really not working out. Obviously, they didn't hit on their targets over this year. They miss at the trade deadline. Then you start getting into next summer, okay, we're going to make significant changes.
Yeah, I'm with you in that. Like, I don't think anything could happen this summer that would put Rob at significant risk there. I always laugh when I think about the notion of Jeannie taking the keys from Mitch and from Jim because they wanted to trade for DeMarcus Cousins. It's like, you couldn't have taken those keys when you heard about Luol Deng. Like, right. You couldn't have taken the keys. The Mozgov Deng thing wasn't enough to take the keys.
Like, though, that will go down as an all-time, because that was back when free agency started at night. Remember back then, it used to be everybody was, you put on a pot of coffee and everybody's staying up late to follow the breaking free agent news, you know, GMs, there's no tampering, right? Wink, wink. And so you were on your number one target's doorstep right at midnight, right? To go ring the bell and try to get that person to agree in free agency. Those deals, we knew the minute they came through that they were bad. And people tried to say, well, but the cap is increasing. We knew those were bad deals at the time. They had to know. Those were frustrating days, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll never forget. I think I was in Havasu and we got word that was the direction that the Lakers were going, and I just walked into the lake.
Did you literally?
It was dark times. I just set my phone down, walked right into the lake, and said, babe, I'll be right. You know, Jen was out there with Jen. I was like, babe, I'll be back in a little bit. The notion of organizational change, it's an interesting concept here. And it's something, by the way, that I think we can kind of see some remnants from And by that, I mean, you know, the Lakers are trying to fill out their front office. They're trying to build out their organization, kind of how the Dodgers built out theirs. And it hasn't gone as quickly as and as well, I think, as people have maybe hoped for. And when you talk to people around the league, there is kind of this question from some of the higher regarded candidates who the Lakers would like to bring into their assistant GM positions. Well, why should I get hired by Rob Pelinka when I could get hired to replace Rob Pelinka in a couple of years, you know? And, and we saw this with, what was his name? Chris Senior, right? The guy from Minnesota who turned down the VP job that the Lakers were offering reportedly. And yeah, I think that the whole league is kind of looking at the Lakers right now and they're kind of waiting to see, all right, when is Mark Walter really going to make his impact on that front office? And I think that this summer is a critical one to the effect of like sending a message to the league, like, no, we're still here. We're going to be here for a little while. And I think that's also riding on how this all plays out as well. Trevor, this has been, as it always is, a lot of fun. I'm realizing as we're recording this that I am exactly a month away from flying out to Vegas for Summer League. We're going to see you out there.
Yeah, I'll be there. I don't have my exact dates locked in just yet, but I'm absolutely 100% going to be out there. And let's go. We'll run it back like last year, and we'll go grab some drinks.
Absolutely. All right, Trevor. You catch all of his stuff at Lakers Nation, Lakers Collective, the Basketball Bulletin, which I just checked out last night, which is really, really good. Your kind of your own kind of NBA show there. And the show that you do with Keith, which I'm blanking on as well.
The NBA front office show.
NBA front office show, which if you're looking to get informed in a like not overly dry way about how the league operates, that's the show to tune into. It's really, really informative, but also super fun. As far as the rest of this week goes, I am going to record a mailbag episode tomorrow. We have Cranges coming on Friday to evaluate JJ season, and that'll send us off into the weekend. So, Trevor, thank you very much for hopping on here. Always a blast. Have a great rest of your days, everybody. Make somebody else's, and we will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Bye, everyone.